is my shit. All I have in this life is my balls, my word. You know, I've been playing with my balls, my word. My whole life. You know, but at the end of the day, my balls are just sitting here on some fucking sofa at some fucking suburbia. And my word, man. My word is right here. Right here. In the Republic of Roots.
Look out! The lever! Till we've met lever, you'll blow us all to atoms!
Right, welcome everyone to another episode of That Record Got Me High. I'm your host, Rob Elba. It's wonderful having you all here with me once again. Today, my guest is British blues guitarist, singer-songwriter Bex Marshall. She has a brand new album out called Fortuna. And today, Bex brought a record and band that I had never heard of in my life. And I have a feeling a lot of you may not have too. But it's pretty awesome. The band is called Republic of Loose. They're from Dublin, Ireland. And specifically, we were talking about their 2004 debut album, This is the Tomb of the Juice. It was a lot of fun talking to Bex about music and songwriting and whatnot. If you like what you hear, Bex is on tour right now as we speak in Europe with plans to tour the States and more later this year. You can find tour dates and more on her website, BexMarshall.com. And now here's me and Bex talking some Republic of Loose.
All right, I want to talk a little about the release you have now, Fortuna, which I have been listening to and is great. It's fantastic.
It's 5 a.m. and the dawn is breaking. Your dawn is breaking through. My heart is breaking too. I thought I was on the mend, but that time, my friend, it's just cruel.
A lot of musicians I've been talking to, sort of the pandemic had a play in releasing whatever they put out now, because you hadn't. This is the first release you've had in quite a bit, right?
Yes, that's right. The lockdown was really. Something that we could, you know, utilize in regards to sort of demoing the album. And, as I say, even though the lockdown sort of makes up for sort of three of those sort of, you know, years of not releasing, it was kind of instrumental in the fact that we could.
Right.
It kind of makes you stand still and think about where you are with everything. Because, you know, those 6 years after my last release, I was busy. I put my nose to the grindstone and I just toured the world independently.
Oh, okay. Nice, nice.
The market, you know, with that record.
Right.
And because I released it independently and didn't have sort of like the huge budget to sort of push it into every country in the world with PR guys and. When I arrived in these countries, it was new for them, you know. So I just thought, well, you know, I'll keep rolling. I'll take it for a long walk, which is really what I did.
Right. But so this new one you recorded, like, so what was the recording process involved? Because you have a lot of different people playing on it, a lot of excellent playing on the whole record. So was it done just in one session, or was it done over a long period of time?
No, I actually gathered everyone together and we went in for a full week.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah, and then came in and did sort of overdubs, you know. So within 2 weeks. The majority of it was all down.
Oh, okay, that's nice. So you had a period you could gestate on it and think of it and write songs, but you had it all. You had all the songs, and you went in with these people, and you guys just knocked it out.
Yeah, and then I did my guitar parts, you know, the next week, and then my vocals the week after.
Oh, okay.
And
that's
the way I kind of roll with things. I like to sort of. It's a luxury to be able to, spend time trying things out. But I mean, I had 80% of what I wanted to. I knew what I wanted to hear.
Right.
But you know, when you get in the studio and you start trying things out, and there's harmonies that sort of work out, and this, that, and the other, and then I really just go with my gut instinct with things like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And it shows. There's a very, yeah, I mean, it kind of shows that sometimes people are really good at not being together in a studio and making it sound like that. But this, you could really tell. I mean, these are people playing together. And your guitar, I mean, your singing's off the chain. I'm sure you've been told you definitely have like a Tina Turner vibe to your voice, which is great.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've heard that. But the guitar playing is like off the chain too. I mean, it's just great guitar playing, your slide playing and your guitar playing, which I guess, I mean, your roots and what you're a fan of, I guess, would tie into the album that you brought in to talk about, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Quite more so than I really sort of like realized until.
Right.
I mean, you know, when you asked me about a record, I could have picked one of many.
Of course.
I really enjoy this record when it's on. It's a kind of it's everything I like, and it's kind of similar to how I, you know, like to write music. There's the funks in it, the sort of slangs in it, you know. He sings kind of really from the heart, and it's kind of raw and brutal, and I dig it. I'm half Irish. I've just applied for my Irish citizenship from, you know, my family roots. So,
oh, really? Nice.
We definitely got some connection. Yeah, yeah.
Trust me. You know what? Living here in the U.S., I wish I could file for like Irish citizenship or Great Britain or something else. Just
you know, everyone's got a bit of Irish in them. You should check it out a bit more.
I do. I actually do have some British. I know I do have some British. So maybe I'll have to live. We'll see how everything goes in the next year or so here.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. They might be loophole for you.
All right. So the first thing, this band you brought, Republic of Loose, and this album, this is The Tomb of the Juice. I knew nothing about this band, never heard of them. And what I like to do is if someone brings this up, I never know. I just start listening to it. I don't read about them, you know. So I'm listening to this record and it's great. And then I read these guys are Irish. They're from Ireland. And I'm like, what?
They're amazing, aren't they?
Yeah, but they sound like, I was thinking maybe they're from Los Angeles, like an LA band, or you know, like I was just blown away. I'm like, how does this, especially the singer Mick Pyro, I guess his name's Michael Tierney, but he calls himself Mick Pyro. I mean, he's got this soulful voice and this falsetto. And so when did you?
But they're amazing.
They are.
And the band, you know, it's an old album now. It's like, you know.
It is. It came out in 2004.
Yeah, so it's 20 years old.
Yeah,
but I mean, I remember going to see them live, because they're not together now, I don't believe.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't think so. That's what I read. And it's actually, it's hard to find too much information about them here, because I guess they were much more of a, you know, people obviously knew about them more over in Europe, and they had a lot of fans.
Yeah.
They had famous fans. Bono, Sinead O'Connor, and you know, people were drawn to them. But so, how did you discover them? Did you discover them like around the time that this came out in 2004?
Around that time, because I was actually married to a music promoter who promoted a club called The Borderline in Charing Cross in Soho in London. So, you know, he had his finger on the pulse, obviously, with what was breaking in and out of London and whatnot. And he, you know, he was very excited when these guys, you know, landed on his desk. And we went to see them in Soho. They weren't actually playing in The Borderline. He wanted to book them, and he wanted to book them for a festival. And sadly, the management was really against, you know, sort of, I don't know. It was a shame, because I remember him saying about the management being really like, you know, strict on where they were playing and this, that, the other.
Oh.
And Barry, you know, he was quite instrumental in breaking many bands in London, because he was a real tastemaker. And so he, you know, he really wanted to champion these guys, but it never happened. But we went to see them in a little sort of dingy sort of red light club, and they just blew the roof off. And that was so amazing, because we were listening to the album by then. We've been listening to it, and to go and see him live, this guy was off the chart. And so I was a fan from then, really. And I've always, you know, I've always put them on, you know, when I'm listening, and I just think, oh, I'll put something on. And they're one of my go-to bands when I'm in a pub and I've got you know, the Spotify app, and people go, put some music on, and I'm right. like, boom. And I stick these on, and people go, who the hell is that?
Yeah, exactly. That just happened to me the other day. I was driving in my car listening, and I had a friend in there, and that's exactly what he did. He said, who is this? And he was like, he thought it was great, and he loved it. But I said, it's this band from Ireland that I'm going to be talking about with this guitar player. And
it's great.
It is. It's great. And I had read, I was reading about their live shows were great, fantastic. I mean, they just bring, I guess, it's funny, the way they describe themselves, what do they say? They say, these stuff your dad likes.
Yeah. No, what I love about it, I mean, he's got a real like hard sense of humor. Like he's brilliant. And a lot of his lyrics are so funny, and they're very catchy, you know, really, like they're on it. They're just edgy and brutal. I love them.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, we'll just, as we go through the songs, we'll discuss, because some of it you could say could be a little problematic, but no, I could tell that they, that this is a very intelligent guy, and they definitely have their tongue in their cheeks for some of this, you know, they're sort of presenting, you know, this like soul funk thing, and sort of bringing up the old, you know, tropes where maybe some of the lyrics then of older soul songs could be considered problematic now, you know?
But, oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, I think with when you use swearing in songs, it, you know, it's either supposed to be there or it's put there for effect. And this is definitely supposed to be there.
Right.
they're not doing it for effect. And, you know, I really feel that the band were coming from a sort of non-commercial sort of, you know, they didn't have a lot of respect for that kind of thing, even though they were doing really well. I think it's such a shame that they weren't recognized more, but again, they were probably, put back because of the lyrics, and some of them are a bit sort of near the knuckle.
Right. You know? Yeah. I mean, they literally, I think the first single off this maybe was Girl, I'm Gonna Fuck You Up. And it's funny, you know how when you're on Spotify, when you download stuff, it says explicit, you know, there'll be explicit lyrics, but it's like, yeah, well, it's right in the title. It's in the name. You didn't have to tell me that.
Well, yeah. But then, you know, there's explicit lyrics in a lot of rapping these days.
Yes.
So really, it's this would sit comfortably a lot amongst all the sort of top rappers of the planet as it is, you know?
Oh, yeah. And there's that in there. I mean, I really appreciate the fact you could tell these guys just have a range of music that they love and they're into, and they sort of pay homage to all that, doing it in these different songs. But it's all done well. It's all done really well, and it's not like it doesn't sound like guys faking it. You know, it really sounds like they're coming from a sincere place of like really loving this music.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, for sure.
Right.
No, they really deliver it with authenticity. From, you know, it's blues, but it's Irish blues. You know, and you know, is what he's talking about is old drunks in pubs and all that kind of thing. And, you know, the sort of dream that, you know, it's that in Ireland, it's like, you know, never going to happen sort of thing, that they're chasing all that kind of thing. And the language, because that's what's used over there. That's what's used on a daily basis, like, you know. And so I think it's really dead spot on from where they're coming from, and is put together with all the influences of, like, I love them. They sound like the Stones, like a really edgy band like the Stones.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's Stones in there.
And lots of other stuff, but, you know.
Yeah, I hear like Prince. I hear Sly and the Family Stone, you know, along with the Rolling Stones. It's like, yeah. It's really great, but it's also, like you said, it does sound authentic. And I was wondering at some point, I'm thinking, this guy, I don't know, he's so good at this. Is it, because Beck's like, when I listened to your release, actually, your stuff and your latest release, I could tell it's authentic. You could tell when someone's singing and they've lived a life, you know, and it's coming from that. And I hear that with you, but sometimes I wonder, maybe he's just really good at putting it on it, faking it, but I don't know. It sounds authentic to me.
Well, it is, but I think, you know, it's like when I make a record, I don't want it to be perfect, because we're not perfect. And blues, you know, shouldn't, you know, it's not perfect. It's more of an expression than, you know, absolute sort of perfect, where the lines sort of touch on the corners. You know, it's like we're splodgy, you know, we're more sort of color and splodge rather than
right.
You know, that's the way I think of when you're being creative, when you're being honest, like really true to your creativity. And so certainly with vocalists like him and myself, you know, when he does his falsetto stuff, it's certainly not perfect, but it nails it.
Yes,
and
right.
Doing it more of a expression rather than a trained, you know, alto or whatever.
Right.
And that's the sort of thing that I want to sing along to, you know what I mean? Rather than, you know, listening to a perfect sort of operatic kind of trained vocal. And that's, you know, it also reflects the, you know, authenticity of where he's coming from, you know?
Yeah.
But he's certainly got the talent and the vocal cords because he nails it.
Right. He does, but it's something, it's kind of hard to quantify, but it's something you sort of know in your gut, right? Because there's nothing worse than like badly done blues, like someone that is not authentic and it's just, it has no teeth to it. There's nothing worse than that.
No, exactly. And it's, and you know, you realize that in the first 20 seconds of listening to the song.
Exactly.
You know, but he's got character and he is a character.
Oh my God, you know, yeah.
And that comes definitely across. I mean, in his lyrics and his presentation and his vocal delivery. So
yeah, it's
that's
great
how I relate to him. Yeah.
All right, so let's start listening to a little bit of the record. I mean, Bex, there are a lot of songs on it. There's 15 songs, so I had Bex pick 10 that will play. You know, the clips from we'll listen to a little. It has this little intro that I like because it mentions the band. I like when bands sort of build their own mythology, you know, and I feel like that's what they were doing with. With this,
yeah, it was difficult to pick what I wanted because there's lots of talky bits in it, and it's difficult.
Yeah, there are, which is great. Like I said, I like that. I appreciate that when bands sort of, you know, build on all that and sort of, because it's sort of, it's mysterious in a way. Like why are they called that? You know, and what are they all about? So I like that. Yeah, so
the spoken word.
Yep, I'll have that in there. I'll have the intro in there, and then it goes into this track, which is awesome, and which I have no idea. Hopefully you'll have some insight to it because I don't. But let's just do a little bit of kite in. Yeah, right there, right from the start, I'm like, whoa, okay. It's great though. So, what do you know anything? Because I could not find anything. I don't know a Kaiden Man. What is? Do you know anything? What that is? What that's referencing?
Kaiden Man, I think it's like means rugged, like a rough guy.
Oh, okay, like okay.
Rough man, and you know, I think he's probably like talking about a guy in a pub. Rough, you know, he's got a story and history,
right?
Who isn't interested in really what the world's going on around him. He's just, you know, doing his thing. He's peeing down his leg and all that kind of thing, and
right,
you know, just doesn't care about the conversation that kids are having around him and that kind of thing.
Right. So I imagine you're drawn to this right away. I love that just that guitar, that little simple guitar thing at the front. That dan, dan, dan. I mean, that's great. That's perfect. And I'm sure, like I said, a lot of this, I'm listening to it, and then when I listen to your release, I say, oh, okay, I could see why Bex loves this, you know, and is drawn to it.
They push the boundaries a bit more than me, actually, you know, with that.
Well, you know, but that's it. But they're going wherever they want to go, and and you know, that's fine, true. But it's got to be, it's
I mean, they've had it rough. You can see, you can tell that, you know, the areas they've grown up in is very reflective of,
of
it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I just feel like the whole sort, they're very street, you know, the whole thing is very street, albeit Irish streets.
Right. But that's funny. That's why I thought, are these guys from LA? You know, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
It's it's great.
It was, it's very entertaining. I mean, it's one to listen to. They got the groove. See, the groove is like there, and it's super. I love them listening and getting into those, you know, the bass lines, and that it's brilliant.
It is. And it's done. It's all done so well. And yeah, let's listen to the next track here. A little bit of Hold Up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It's just, yeah, the lyrics are just great. They're bizarre, you know.
I know. It's great. It's one of those, you know, it's almost like when I got into, it's like the lyrics might not mean much sense, but you just can't help singing along to them. And that's what a great record is.
Yeah, yeah. It's just
like,
sounds,
it doesn't
yeah.
matter if it doesn't make much sense to you. It's just like, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers. That's what I was thinking about.
Oh, well, okay. But,
you know, yeah, because like, a lot of the Red Hot Chili Peppers songs are sort of random sort of words, like random things.
It's more
together,
about how they sound, the sound of them. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Because he's saying, she don't like that fast shit, that sexually harassed shit. I mean, that just sounds great. So I'm like on board. I'm on
board. She likes it country. Oh, she likes it country. At
right.
the time I was listening to that, I was going to Texas a lot, you know, and very
oh,
much
really?
Into that Americana scene. And I used to think, yeah, she likes it country. Yeah, I love that. I love that line.
So you toured the States? You've toured the States here?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I had.
They must love you in Texas. I'm thinking they would eat your music up there.
Yeah, I've done a lot of touring sort of through the Midwest. My agent was out of Colorado and used to book me, starting in New York. Going all the way across to San Francisco and then drop down and then LA
oh, wow.
and then all the way back to New York. So that would be my tour.
Wow.
So I can't really say I didn't do that much in Texas, to be honest. Obviously, Austin, I performed at Southwest a couple of times.
Yeah.
Back in around sort of 2005 and 2006. But it wasn't really an official showcase. But hopefully I'm gonna apply to go next year. And showcase the record there. So then,
oh, great.
Next March. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So now we get, like we said, like I said, this is a single off the album. Sure, why not call yourself, why not have a single, Girl, I'm Gonna Fuck You Up and make it a single off your album. I love that.
That's a big done.
Right? So let's do a little bit of Girl, I'm Gonna Fuck You Up.
Thank you.
it just has a really great groove. And obviously, his, you know, it's tongue-in-cheek. I mean, it, for something like this, it's all about how it's presented. Because some band could present, call a song, have a song like this and do it, and it would not be okay because just they're not presenting it correctly, I feel.
Yes, that's right. It's kind of addictive. I mean, it just, it's like mantra all the way through it, and you end up singing it. You know, and you think, and it's not the nicest sort of thought in the world, but it kind of is appealing. And you kind of think, you know, it's kind of, it's like the prospect of getting fucked up has never sounded so, you know, appealing.
I'm glad you're on here saying that, Bex, because if it was like some dude, if it was two dudes talking about that, I don't know how that would go over, but I'm glad you're here. Yeah, you're saying that it's okay.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and it's you just one listen is never enough. You know what I mean? It's this is the most addictive track on the album, without a doubt.
It is. It's great.
When it comes on, it's groovy, it's swaggery, and you just think, and it's like listening to like the next, you know, the Stones should do a cover of this.
Oh my God, yeah. I could hear this on Some Girls. Like, it could have been like a Some Girls track or something. You,
exactly. It just sounds like the intro of a Stones track. Yes. And it's just like really good.
And yeah, and you mentioned swagger. It does, a lot of this music does have that swagger to it. I mean, he's got a very confident delivery, which sells it, you know, which sells all this.
Without a doubt. Now, they got the music, they got the lyrics, they got the attitude.
We're going to talk about Something in the Water. There's a lot of religious imagery here. And I don't know if I'm reading, just the way I am, sometimes when I hear something like this and I hear, I think, oh, that's just a tongue in cheek. They're just doing that as a, you know, to present a certain way, to sound a certain way. But it's not really, I mean, I don't think they're really religious. But I don't know. That's just me projecting. I mean, maybe they... maybe he is. I don't know.
Well, Ireland in particular has that, you know, definite strong religious undertones pretty much everywhere.
Right.
Certainly from the older generations. So no doubt the band would have been around that growing up.
Right.
And it's a little bit like me with my House of Mercy album, the last album I put out, where I wanted to reflect, like, you know, we're all aware of religion and, you know, whether it's good or bad, whether you're into it or out of it or whatever. The thing is that, you know, it's a higher, you know, it's kind of all about that higher energy, that higher sort of draw of where your beliefs are. And I think, you know, when you're writing songs, reflecting, you know, sort of situations to, you know, to put those religious sort of undertones in is just another way of getting it across. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so Something in the Water, you know, the baptism water, you know, whatever you want to think about that. It's great to be able to sort of just have your own sort of views on it as well, because you could be right, you could be wrong. But again, it's something to think about. But the House of Mercy was like, you know, House of Mercy is, it's so crazy because the place where we do our writing retreat in Cyprus is a Turkish area, and the street is called Minareli Street, and Minareli means house of worship in Turkey. And that's, it's kind of bizarre, but I think you know, the House of Mercy for us was like putting bands up on the road because they were broke and they needed someone to stay in London.
Right.
And there was always a pot of hot stew on the counter and a bed and a key, and you're in London, you're in central London, and that's why we called the House of Mercy.
So that's kind of like your church in a way. That was like your church.
That's
going
right.
To church, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my religion, I guess, is music.
There you go.
That's what I believe in, and that's what heals me, and all that sort of thing.
I'm thinking, I'm imagining maybe that's where he's coming from, the same place. They're coming from the same place.
Exactly.
But it's great, too. Let's just do a little bit of Something in the Water.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. That's why I say you don't have to. Sometimes I feel like some people would just get turned off by that if they hear Jesus. Oh, that's it. But it's like you can't help just let yourself be moved by that, you know? And just enjoy it for what it is. And you could take it however you want, and you don't have to, you know. Who cares if you're an atheist? You could be an atheist but still love that and be moved by that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of reflective of one of those sort of Sunday morning gospel churches where, you know, the guys up there, the preacher is just repetitive. And that's very bluesy. He's like repeating that line, you know, it's what the blues guys do as well. And so there's that great sort of connection there in that intro. I mean, it does go into a rhythm and another good beat of a great song, but it's that intro. It's very sort of gospel, yeah.
Oh yeah, it is. And it just sucks you in. Yeah, I'll play a little bit of the later in the song there, because that intro does suck you in, but then it ends up. A lot of their songs definitely take their time, right? They have these, they have these like intros into them, and they sort of take their time and build. And it's great. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no, it's done very well. I mean, there's a whole bunch of dynamics in this record, which again, you know, it's a journey. It's like putting on a favorite movie. You know, it's a start, it's a middle, it's an end. I love it.
Yep. And this next one, another single off the album. Let's just do a little bit of Tell More Lies.
Check it out, nowadays. Check it out, nowadays.
I like that reference. I love when you hear stuff that could be timeless in a way. It's not, you know, you think it could have been recorded much earlier, but then he mentions place to put away your PlayStation, and on that he brings you up to, oh, okay. This was done in the 2000s.
Yeah, right? Yeah. No, maybe that's like reflective of just, you know, people living in their own little worlds.
Yes.
And lying about their reality.
Right, right, right. Yeah, and again, just his wordplay is great. I love when he says later in it, you want to believe all the answers and you want to find a cure for cancers. That's great.
And the topless dancers.
And he puts the topless dancers in there too. Yeah, it's really great. So this next one, Slow Down, this is a song that I had playing in my car when my friend was in there, and he's like, oh my God, what is this? And this is what I was talking about. It's like this song that just sort of takes its time, and it's very bluesy, and I feel like it's kind of like one of the showpieces of the album. A little clip of it won't do it justice. I'll have a little more in there, but let's listen just to a little bit of Slow Down.
Child, you better slow down before you get where you're going too soon. Child, before you find out that it just ain't no good for you.
Once I had money.
Once I had money
that I didn't need. Once I had money,
but I found out that it just ain't.
once I had a job.
Once I had a job.
I heard it working.
So yeah, later as he keeps going and building, this is the song Bex where I was thinking, because I've just been listening to your record, and then I'm thinking, man, she's got such a great voice, and you could hear, you know, you could just hear that it's authentic and it's real. And then I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, is it, he sounds so good, but he's like a young guy. How does he have all this in him already? Is he just like a really good actor, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, he was. This is 20 years ago, this record.
Exactly, so he's like a young guy.
He was a young guy, yeah, but he was, I felt like he, I mean, I did meet him, and I felt like he'd been through the mill in his young life. I don't know, he was like a very, like a realist, and just had a massive talent, but somebody who's really gone through the mill early in his life. That's how it came across, you know. Okay. He was very streetwise and very very down to earth, very brutally blunt, you know, blunt.
And maybe an old soul. I know younger people, sometimes they could be like an old soul.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah definitely.
Okay,
he
that's
must
good
be like, I feel like, especially with that sort of, you know, that bit in the middle where he's talking to the girl.
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to play some of that in there.
He he's really like, you know, he's not, I think it's called Fuck Everybody.
Right.
And it's like, you know, he's very, I just feel like he, you know, he's very frustrated with it all, and, you know, lack of opportunities or whatever. And the whole business, music business maybe at the time was, I don't know, but he kind of, you know, that sort of everything's unfair and fuck everybody, basically, you know.
Right.
So yeah, that definitely came across.
And by the way, everything is unfair and fuck everybody. That's right. I mean, basically.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, you know, so there's the fact that they're not gigging, that they broke up. I just feel like, you know, whatever happened, you know, was really reflective of what they were singing about.
Right.
And who knows, if it comes back and becomes a huge, massive success, then good for them, you know?
Yeah. You know, we see this every day. We see people that are just like so talented and so great, and just for one reason or another, just never. And then you see people that become big, and it's like, well, why did they, you know, how did that happen? But, you know, that's it. Life's not fair, right? So.
But I think with music, and I always remember, you know, Barry used to say this to me, music will find its place where it should be, its level, you know.
Oh, okay.
You can't keep it, but if it's great, if it's wonderful, it's brilliant, it will get out there, it will find its way to where it should be eventually.
Okay. Yeah. All right, well, that's a nice sentiment. I don't know if it's 100% agree with it, but it's a nice, that's a nice sentiment.
Well, yeah, it was the girl who did Summer Over the Rainbow,
Judy Garland.
No the, well, yeah. Not the original.
Oh, after her.
Yeah, what was her name? She had an amazing voice. Terrible, because I'm really bad with names. But
no, that's all right. So am I.
She became famous after she died. I mean, sadly, she died from cancer.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, that, I mean, that happens.
And
too.
And then her album leaked out and became, I mean, it sold millions. So, you know, that you just, I mean, you know, it's tragic that she wasn't alive to see it. But, you know, her music found its level.
Right.
Eventually, you know.
Eva, are you talking about Eva Cassidy?
Eva Cassidy.
I just looked it up on Google.
Eva Cassidy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, she's huge.
Oh,
I mean,
33.
Who doesn't know that song?
That's a shame. She was only 33. She died of bone cancer. So
I know. Exactly. Yeah, but her music went on to become huge, and you know, it's a great story.
Right, it is. And you're right. At the end of the day, and also, you know how it is. I mean, like something like this, there are people that probably, like you and like me now too, love this record and will come back to it and listen to it, and that's great. You know, that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean everyone, you know, it has to be huge. But if you're grabbing, you know, if some people get it and you're grabbing them, then that's all you could ask for, right?
Absolutely.
Exactly.
You know, it's spreading the word.
All right, so here's another one that Bex picked that we're going to listen to. Let's listen to a little bit of Sweet Cola of Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. There's that falsetto again. Like you said, it's not a perfect, but that's part of its charm and what makes it great.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. And it's addictive listening. You know, sometimes you love to listen to things that aren't perfect, and that's the quality.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're drawn to. I know, at least people like us, not everyone. So this next one, this Six Sober Sounds, you sort of, like you could say this, even though he is a young guy, you could see these are people that have been through stuff and seen stuff. I guess you can, if you're growing up in Ireland, I guess that's almost like you couldn't help it, right?
Yeah, well, you know, at an early age as well, you know.
Right. But it's great, and it's kind of heavy. Let's listen to a little bit of Six Sober Sounds. I noticed there's not like the instrumentation on this, the guitar playing, it's very well done, but nothing, it's not like they got crazy solos going on or anything. It's just very well done and very tasteful.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, the lyrics are great. They stand up on their own.
Oh, this one. Yeah. He's definitely telling a little story.
And I think that's important in albums. You know, you don't have to have a blistering solo every song.
Yes. Right. For sure.
You know, or it doesn't have to be a guitar solo every song or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's the prerogative of the artist to if you want to do that like that, then that's, you know, part of the story, and part of the body of work.
Right. Now, this again, another one you picked to highlight was Dial Jesus for Sweetness. Again, like I said, we get these, you know, I think it's just sort of the music maybe that he listened to, he grew up with, gospel. I mean, I'm sure there was some a gospel in there, right?
Yeah, definitely.
There had to
be. Again, you know, the church, the whole church thing growing up in Ireland is very prominent, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's nice. I think there's nothing wrong with, even if you're not maybe a believer, you could take the good. There's very good aspects to a lot of it. And, you know, of course, Jesus, at the end of the day, Jesus, if everyone who is Christian really followed Jesus's teachings, that would be great. That would be awesome. So there's nothing wrong with any of that.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. It's one of those things that we try, even though we you know, it's great material and it's great subject matter to write about and to compare to and to, you know, to sort of pick apart and throw back together. It's still one of those taboo subjects where, you know, we should never really encroach too much on the discussion of it. Otherwise,
we go down the
rabbit hole. And, you know, and it's sad. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think... you know, the reflection of upbringing, and especially if it's, you know, been heavily with religion or whatever, it's definitely something that affects you. And, you know, especially if you're into writing music and blues, especially.
Right.
Yeah, I think you have to sort of touch base on with it, you know, as much as possible.
Right. Yeah. And he definitely did hear it's a little bit of Dial Jesus for Sweetness.
Oh, Lord, oh, Lord, oh, Lord. got me one thing that I can do for you.
So there's again what you were talking about before, that preacher thing of repeating something over and over again to sort of hammer it in.
Yeah, you know, it's like a mantra. You know? I mean, he sort of, it's a kind of, you know, a gospel-y, bluesy sort of mantra. And, you know, I think it's brilliant. I think the way he sort of intertwines the gospel and blues and almost like the rap, you know, it's spoken word as well.
Yeah, and just that guitar, that slide guitar, I'm thinking, oh, that's right up your alley, because that's definitely listening to your music. I mean, obviously, that's up your alley, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
So when did you start playing a guitar? Like, when did you first pick up a guitar?
Me? I was around 9 years old.
Oh, really?
I was drawn to it very early, and it was like, this is my plaything. This is what I'm going to... This is going to bring me a lot of happiness.
Wow.
I was like, yeah, this is my PlayStation or whatever you want to...
Yes.
relate it to these days. But, you know, I was hungry for it. I was really hungry to learn it. And I didn't know what I wanted to learn because I really hadn't been exposed to that much. But I'd had my uncle play and sing it, and I just thought... I've got to have a go at it, you know, and it was really in my, to-do list at 9 years old.
Wow. And so did you started playing guitar, were you singing right away too? Were you playing and singing right from the start?
No, not at all. No, not singing. Well, I say that, but my mum used to put me on the table at my granny's house and I'd be singing and not really knowing how to sing or what to sing. But, you know, my mum would, I was always singing, but not really thinking about how I was singing, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I never had lessons or anything. And then karaoke sort of appeared. And I was like, oh, this is like the best thing ever. And so it gave me an opportunity to get up on a microphone. And I think, you know, I've always been very sort of monkey see, monkey do with things. Right. If you've got a natural optimism for music and natural rhythm and you'll get there by just persevering. And that's pretty much what I did, you know. And then I was lucky. The people around me had great musical taste. My uncle had a great, my other uncle, my dad's side had a fantastic record collection, which I was in, you know, every time he went to snooker, I was in there, you know, playing records and stuff.
Right.
In his room and that. So, you know, and then my mum, you know, she was listening to different things as well. So between all of them, I kind of got a good rounded sort of education on what was going on at the time.
Right. And I can definitely hear that. It's definitely not a one note album. Your record, it definitely has a lot of different feels and you're taking different, but just at the end of the day, just I'm really you just you know, the voice is like something that you can't fake when you're singing like that. I feel like, you know, you either have it and you have that, like, just that that rasp and that feeling of lived, you know, you've lived some, you know, you've really lived a life, and that definitely comes across.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, this is my fourth album now, so
right.
I think as you move on, and I'm always learning, especially, you know, in production now. I love to produce now, so it's really it's all about letting your creativity be free, but then, you know, putting it into, you know, the professional way to sort of record something and to produce something. So you kind of got to wear two hats. You do the bulk of you write the songs, and then when you go into production mode, you still have to allow a little bit of, you know, creativity to sort of put it all together and stuff. But you kind of got to stick to some guidelines. And
right.
And it's a whole different sort of way of production and creativity in that stage. So it's really good fun, and I love it. I mean, there's nothing. The main thing for me is what I take out of it is, like, you know, you never say that something's wrong, you know, if you feel like that's where it's going.
Right.
That's the way to get the best sort of creativity out of people, is when you think that you're going to do something wrong, then it stops and you can't be as free as you need to be.
Yeah, well, that's hard. And that's something I think a lot of people maybe struggle with. And it's hard because that's a hard thing, because you have an idea in your head how you want something to be. But then you're in a studio and you may have an engineer saying, oh, well, you can't do that. You got to do this. And it really takes, you know, knowing yourself and knowing what you want to sort of push back and say, no, I want to do this, or I want to try that. And that's what I think separates the real artists from people that are just going in, letting them, you know, just sort of make it sound like the way maybe someone else wants it to sound, but not what you hear in your head.
Right, yeah, exactly. You know, and it's indulgent. You know, you have to sort of be aware of not being too indulgent. It's like sort of, you know, chiseling away at a statue until you think, yeah, I'm done. I've got to abandon it now.
Right.
and that's the right word to use, is abandon, because you could go on and on and on.
Right. Oh, yeah. Got it.
Some people.
Yeah, I know. Some people do that. I know. I've known people that do that. They're never happy, and they're always fixing and doing it, and they end up ruining it, or it's not good anymore. Because yeah, you have to know when.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So there, I think because this came out in, I mean, this is great. It's a great release. It came out in 2004. There were CDs. There's a lot of songs on here. It's really long. It's like over an hour. So maybe, I don't know if it, maybe, I think you picked really good songs. And I think maybe there may be kind of one or two too many songs on this, but it's fine. You know, it's just how it is. It's just how it is.
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah.
This is a great last thing to listen to. I feel like this could have been the last song on the album, Black Bread, that you picked. But let's just do a little bit.
I think you're right. You know?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do a little bit of Black Bread. It's really great. And you know, one thing I really appreciate about this record is that I love things where you kind of can't tell when it was made, you know, and it has kind of a timeless quality, which your release now, Fortuna, I was thinking the same thing, you know, that it just sort of sounds like it could have been taken from the vaults, like, you know, from a long time ago or something. And that's really great. I always like that, and I appreciate it.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's the ultimate sort of goal, isn't it? To produce something that's timeless, in a way, you know?
Yep.
And that just, I guess, goes to show that the influences that, you know, I've drawn on to make this record, and the way I've used them into the album, actually, you know, I've done that job. And I, you know, that's what I wanted to do. That's what I endeavoured to do in the first place, is to try and create something that sounded like the songs that I love and that I got something from in the first place.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it was very successful. So where's the best place for people to go if they want to check out what you know? What do you want to send them?
Well, if you go to Bex Marshall, that's BexMarshall.com, that's all the info's there and updated regularly. You can buy the album, download the album, order the album, and see all the stuff that I'm coming, you know, to do this year.
All right, nice. And then it'll be updated. If you do end up being able to come here to the States, that'll all be on there too as well, right?
Oh yeah,
that'd
absolutely.
Be great. Definitely. All right. Well, if you make it out to LA, I'll definitely be there.
I do make it out to LA quite a bit, actually.
Oh, great.
I was there only a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I wish Howard would have told me, but...
Well, I'll let you know next time.
Yeah, let me know.
I come over and I do some parties. The famous party throwers.
Nice. Well, I haven't been invited. I just moved here recently. I haven't been invited to any of those parties yet, so that'll be...
Well, the next time I come out, I'll ask you if you have a time.
Well, thanks. This was great. I really appreciate just people bringing shit that I never heard before, and I'm just blown away by it, and you definitely did that. Don't forget, everyone, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook. It's at That Record Got Me High. On X, it's at TRGMH Podcast. You can email me at TRGMH33@gmail.com. Most importantly, if you appreciate the show and you love listening to it, you can go to patreon.com/TRGMH, and you can help support the show. You can become a patron of the show. I'd appreciate it. Bex, this was really great. It was great having you on, and hopefully we'll see you in person soon.
Indeed, yes, for sure. I'll look forward to it.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Until next week, I'm Rob Elba. We'll see you.